Blog Talk Radio.
Living Out Loud is hosted by Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power, an in-depth study of professional women in a relationship. She is an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 in some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further ado, here's your host of Living Out Loud, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Welcome, everyone. We have a wonderful show today. You can reach me on my website, drfrieda.com, F-R-I-E-D-A, whenever you would like. And today's first guest is, he's a counselor and educator, Nigel Williamson, and he has been himself involved in a gang, and he feels because of that he has the ability to give the right answers to the questions that are being asked out there. So this should be for a very interesting show. That is our first guest, and we will start right now with the right questions. So welcome to our show.
Well, actually, he's not Ryan. He's going to be coming on in a few quick minutes. We wanted to, before he came on, wanted to talk a little bit about what had happened this week in the world news with the Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma racist chant. It got a lot of people upset, and everyone's talking about it. So I was wondering if you could possibly discuss a little bit about the mental fallout and the anguish of mental anguish that has occurred in the wake of this incident.
Absolutely. You know, we have freedom of speech. How far should that freedom of speech go? Because if you really have a way of offending someone, harassing someone, creating slander or harm, that's not a good thing. That's not what we intended. So we have to really look and see what freedom of speech means. The wrong attitude can seriously kill someone if you act on those feelings. So when we're looking at a situation and we're looking at this university in Oklahoma, and what happened? Was it just for fun? Were they joking around? Well, if you were an African-American, would you think it's just a joke? Did they think they were just inclusive? Possibly. But still, what kind of message are they sending to each other that would bring something down, would bring other people to a point of having to be discriminated in today's age? And we're trying so hard now to have less of a divide with each other, and everything is coming out, thankfully. So this timing is exactly when we're extremely sensitive to the injustice, even if it's through a joke or teasing. So,
but do you feel that this thing, I talked to somebody earlier today, they didn't have to deal with this thing years ago. It was only recently that everyone's got recordings and cameras and social media. So do you feel that what are the positives and negatives to having, knowing that you could be constantly filmed? Do you think people are going to give fake versions of themselves and not truly be who they are? I mean, know that, you know, they captured somebody doing something racist or saying something racist, but do you think that it could ultimately be negative as a collective in the long term, knowing that you have a camera on you all the time?
Well, it's true. It can go to the other extreme where you don't have your privacy at all. Look, you know, there's something new out now. Instead of the Facebook, where you just take pictures of yourself when you think you look your best, and you send that out. So everything is being put into this place of cyberspace, and we're open to being seen in all different aspects of our lifestyle. Is that good? Well, it's good if you're exposed in some way to something that could be harmful or dangerous. We do need our privacy to a point. If that privacy involves just yourself, just people around you, and it's something that's neutral, that will not affect other people in a negative way.
Okay.
So,
also,
you know,
do you think that, what do you think will ultimately happen? How would you, if you were to talk about the mental anguish, again, we're talking about the fallout of that, what occurred, what do you think is going through the minds of the fellow fraternity members, and what do you think is going through the minds of their parents, and then the minds of the students on that campus?
Well, you know, they weren't all involved. And even the fellow fraternity members that were on the bus were not involved necessarily. So we have to look at, you know, who were the people that started this? Who were the leaders involved? You know, there's been research on group mindsets. And when there's a group mentality, people usually follow that group or that leader. And when someone steps out of that group and does something on their own, then other people follow it as well. So we need more leadership qualities. The person who took that video and sent it out, the question is, did he do the right thing? Well, he did expose something that hit a nerve, and that is attitude affects change. Attitude affects behavior. And where do we go with this behavior? I mean, Hitler had an attitude. He took cheerleaders, and he had this campaign, you know, hurrah, hurrah, and pulled everybody in with a false sense. So we can't afford to really just think of language as something that's just innocent, because it's not.
Okay. And Dr. Frieda, we have your very first guest available. So would you like to reintroduce Mr. Williamson?
Absolutely. So let's see what I have here. I have a person who is extremely interesting. This person actually experienced being in a gang and what it was like. And now he's reaching out to other young people to let them know firsthand what to expect and how to fix their needs and their pain and what direction to go into. So this is something that is different, because usually it's a mental health professional. But then again, these people don't necessarily have the ability to have had experience in this area. So we're really happy to go ahead. And Ryan, could you introduce him, please, because I don't have
sure. Mr. Nigel Williamson is the author of Life's Ultimate Ticket. He went from he was a gang member, and he became the valedictorian. So, Mr. Williamson, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Got it.
So what would you tell us? What kind of experience did you have when you went ahead and you were in a gang yourself? Can you tell us a little bit about why that happened and what that was like?
I often consider myself to be one of the many kids who crossed the tracks and then crossed back, I would say, ever so often, because I started out as a geek. I never started out wanting to join a gang. I was just a geek, and because I read very big books, I spoke with polysyllabic words, etc., and I had very few friends. However, when I was I'm from British Guyana, and in my teenage years, when I started high school, I started losing friends because they didn't want to associate with me. I went through the whole phase of being bullied, etc., but I gravitated towards the people who befriended me. And I said to people time and again, gangs are like family. The only difference is they're family for the wrong thing. So there's always like let's describe a gang. We'd have like baby Snap, we'll have Snap or a little Snap, and then we'll have big Snap. The big Snap is the one who's leading out, et cetera, in whatever is the quote-unquote behavior that the gang is participating in. However, he would have the junior one to mentor the new members, et cetera. And it would be a family. They'd look out for each other. They'd be there to get your back if there's a fight, if there's an issue, et cetera. And whatever it is you're a part of, that's what the other person do. I gravitated to that group because they were like a family and I didn't have friends. At that point, my behavior started eroding and becoming very, very obnoxious, etc. And I ended up getting kicked out of high school. I tried to get into a technical institute. I wrote an exam, and after I wrote the exam, of the 843 students, I got the highest score. And I was given a chance. The principal at that institution said to me, he said, my sister's the principal at another school, and I'm going to speak to her for you and give you a second chance. That's how I got a second chance at high school. That's how I graduated valedictorian. That's how I became an educator. And I've made it my duty ever since to work with students who are failing or who are taking negative paths to try to show them the way across the path again.
So are you telling us that you were involved because you felt emptiness and they went ahead?
I was looking for association. I was looking for friendship, and there was so much emptiness.
At what point did you feel that these people were not good for you? What happened that made you change your mind?
I think when I got kicked out of school, my father forced me away from that side of town. I went to school at McKenzie High. It was like about 14 to 15 miles away from where I lived. I commuted every day on foot. And after I got kicked out of school, my father refused to allow me to go that way. At that time, cell phone was not as ubiquitous as it is today. And the house phone was censored, the conversation was broken. And it allowed me to start back reading. At that time, I had just started working with a mentor. And my mentor and a tutor were the two people who nurtured me back to where I ought to be.
So today, with where you've gotten, and you've done a wonderful job, and you deserve a lot of credit, what do you tell other young people who are lonely and who are looking to connect and feel isolated? What should they do?
I think the very first thing you wanted to help somebody to do is identify their purpose. Time and again, one of the big things with us is we look for attention, we look for approval, we look for association that makes us internally feel nice, but it doesn't fulfill that purpose we wanted to achieve. So if we start with identifying our purpose, it channels where our focus is, and when our focus is channeled, it dictates how our productivity or what we spend our time on, and that's what gives rise to substantial outcome, and that's what my mentor helped me to develop. That place where I move to identify my purpose and realize my strengths and establish my goals and be productive to achieve them. And as I became productive in achieving little goals, I started seeing a bigger me in the picture.
So how would you say someone would go about finding a mentor?
Finding a mentor is always a challenge for people. I was fortunate. I have an organization, Men and Mentors, where we do virtual mentoring, and I also have a subscription-based mentoring program where I have students around the country where each month we would send a lesson to them, and then we'd have a dialogue inside my membership site, menandmentors.org. And in that way, I'm able to talk and open up with people that are separated by distance, and they don't have to be in the same space, but our conversation could be relevant and can be current. I'm currently in partnership. I'm establishing a partnership with a local school district right now where I'll be making that very mentoring available to their students who are failing and being kicked out of school. Outside of doing mentoring, I primarily work with I own two tutoring centers where I help students who are struggling to get back their academic foundation. I used to be a high school teacher, so It was natural for me to want to help people to get back their life together. This year, six of my students are going off to college free, because of race test scores and because of where their GPA is. So they're all going off on merit scholarships. And about 17 are going off on partial scholarships, all because of race test scores and identifying their purpose again, helping their productivity to come alongside it and being able to focus.
So let me ask you, do you think bullying is part of this lack of confidence and loss of self-esteem? Has that been part of the problem as well?
It is. It is. It is for me. It might not be for other people. It might not be for other people. I remembered I've always been very skinny. I'm at my heaviest right now at 175 pounds. And I said that to say this. I was bullied about my ears are big, I'm skinny, my neck is long, my head is small, and my teeth is not as straight as somebody else. I remember being bullied on several fronts. I remember many days my lunch was taken away at school by bullies. And the structure that we have here in the U.S. is not the same structure in Guyana where I grew up. However, the impacts of bullying is the same, where one wanders off to seek association with a group that can provide them a facade of shelter. It just happened that the group that I connected with was a gang.
So that was your comfort area,
Nigel,
your comfort level.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, Brian.
No, this is Ron. I was just wondering, was there any particular quote that you remember that you always fall back on that is an inspiration that made you push along and become successful?
One of the big things, one of the biggest quotes that has always I've always kept before me, in fact I have it written on the wall in my office, is the only reason why the windshield is bigger than the rear view mirror is because your life is ahead of you and not behind. The mistakes you've made are behind. And one of the other things my father used to keep on saying to us is, yesterday ended last night. Tomorrow is a new day. Today is a new day. So once we know that yesterday ended last night, we can live through that, knowing that we can start today with a fresh perspective and take tools and take the strength that we have today and move forward.
Okay.
That's wonderful. I wish we could all feel that way. That is something to remember every day when you get up. I love that part with the windshield in front of you. It's so true. If you can just remember that we have all these opportunities.
I think another thing too, when we look at earlier when I was listening, you talking about the behavior of association that we would call it. The students who are on that bus, many of those students in their heart might be very good people. But because they're in an association with certain activity, it gives rise to them participating. Of their own volition, they might not even ever participate in that kind of behavior. And that's like, again, that's what happened to me. On my own, some of the things I would never do. But when you are there, and that's the atmosphere, and that's the energy, you subscribe to that. And that's one of the big reasons why today, whenever I'm talking to students, or whenever I'm providing a workshop, or wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I keep on identifying the group where you are working. If it's not in line with your purpose, you want to shift.
It would be wonderful if more groups would reach out. Am I right, Ryan, rather than these groups that are end up being
and
very
Nigel,
dangerous for you?
Fortunately, we're we're out of time, but we want to thank you. And how could people learn more about you?
People can contact me through menandmentors.org. That's one of my websites, or through mattconnects.com. My info at mattconnects.com or info at reaching... info at menandmentors.org. www.thegailwilliamson.org.
Okay.
The Gail
Williamson, thank you
so much, Mr. Williams. He's the author of Life's Ultimate Ticket, Getting Your Life Back on Track. It's extremely important that our younger generation is able to feel a support system through someone like you and the book that you have written. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much.
You're more
than
welcome. Take care. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, Dr. Frieda, your next guest is going to provide some insight to all of us about creative ways about losing weight, revealing some of the ways that, you know, maybe we all want to learn about, of how to reduce our calorie intake.
We think we know by now.
His name is Dr. Sandeep. Yeah, Dr. Sandeep Grewal. He's the author of Fat Me Not, Weight Loss Diet of the Future, and he's with us right now. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Our pleasure. So tell us, you know, what is one of the biggest problems that people are having? I mean, as I said, we all know what we need to do. And that's actually not opening our mouth so much and putting it in. But we just can't stop that urge of being compulsive about all this eating that we do. What do you think is the biggest problem here?
Well, we are facing several issues when it comes to the weight loss or weight gain or the obesity epidemic that we are facing. What is happening is we are getting mixed messages from marketing, from writing, and from all other places, which is causing people to get confused. And on top of it, most of the weight loss-related treatments are not covered by insurance. So people do what they do best. When they don't have dental coverage, they try to take it in their own hands and try to fix their own teeth. Same way people have been trying to lose weight by themselves with whatever information that is available. Also, the weight loss diets that are being used nowadays are based on research done in 1950s and 1960s. And since then, there has been a lot more advances in weight loss research, but because they are not translated into a public knowledge, many people don't know about it, and we still go about doing weight loss the wrong way.
So tell us about this. We would love to know what advances. I think our population is heavier than ever. And we know that we're supposed to eat less carbs, less sugar, all natural. So what else is out there that we don't know about?
Well, what we don't know about is currently, let's see, the concept of weight loss is calorie in and calorie out. We think if we take so many calories in and we are able to expend them, then we should not gain weight. And most of the diets are based on that. Some of the diets are restrictive diet, for example, and these are the diets of the 1960s, let me tell you. Restrictive diets such as low-carb diet or low-fat diet, what these diets are doing is they are turning people into a craving machine, because when you have a low-carb diet, it turns into a high-fat diet just by substitution of food. And that leads people to have an unhealthy diet. And because they are lacking carbs, they start craving more and they are not able to sustain the diet. Also, latest research is showing that food can affect our behavior, eating behavior. So it's not just about calories. And I can give you an example. They did a study in rats. In the rat, they gave the rat a sugary drink. And what they noticed was when the rat drank that sugary drink, which is like soda we drink, it ate more in the first hour. When they gave this rat sugary drink every single day, slowly the rat started eating more and more and started showing binge eating behavior. And this is what is happening. We are drinking one bottle of soda every day, and that is slowly affecting our eating behavior. And it's not just the calories we get from that soda, but the calories we get after our eating behavior has been modified by that soda to a point that we are binge eating and not able to control and craving even more.
So you say gut bacteria. How do you learn to control your weight? And how does that affect us, the gut bacteria in our system?
Yeah, this is a very interesting. Yeah, that's a good question. And this is a very interesting part of latest research which is coming up. We know there are trillions of bacteria in our stomach and intestines. Before, we thought these bacteria are just sitting there and doing nothing. But these bacteria are actually modifying our eating behavior. They can affect our cravings, and they can make us crave the foods which are good for them. And how they do it is they sit in our stomach, and then they send these signals from the stomach and intestines. They hack into it, and these chemicals, when they go into the brain, can make us eat what they want us to eat. So, for example, if somebody is eating a highly processed foods, taking a high sugar diet, high carb diet, which is an unhealthy diet, they will develop these bad bacteria, which we call the fat me yes bacteria, and these bacteria will then keep on making them crave the bad food. And that is why it is so difficult to come out of that cycle of eating bad food, because the craving keeps on coming to eat that food.
So is it true that it takes about 3 days to get over that craving, detoxing? Because as we know, you know, you eat too much carbs and sugar, you reach a peak and then you reach a low and then you want it all over again. And that's after 3 days, you don't have that peak highs and lows anymore. Is that the case?
Well, the peak high and low is what we call is the insulin peak. What happens is when people eat a lot of sugary stuff or a lot of carbs, it suddenly spikes their insulin. This insulin spike causes sugar to go down suddenly. They start getting fatigued, and then they have to eat more sugar or carbs to just to pep themselves up back again. But this cycle may end up in 3 to 5 days if after you stop it. However, because the research is showing that a mixture of sugar and fat or pure sugary drink also modify our eating behavior in terms of making us crave more bad food, and that effect can last for weeks to months.
So are you saying, are you telling us that it's not necessarily how much, well, that also is effective, but what you eat plays a big part on how you're going to be able to maintain a healthy diet? Because when you're eating the wrong foods, the calories add up, and the right foods prevent cravings, and the right foods prevent the calories from skyrocketing up there. Is that right? When you eat, so it's not necessarily the calories, but what you eat that makes a bigger difference. Is that right?
I think you're absolutely right. It is not just about calories anymore. It is more about what we eat, how much we eat, and also how we eat is very important in losing weight. One of the example is many people think that if they eat once a day, they are going to lose weight. But that is not true. When you look at the research, if people eat once a day, they are subjecting themselves to a fasting state of almost 23 hours. And when that happens, our body metabolism goes down by almost 60%. We lose almost half of our metabolic rate. And when that happens, anything that we eat once a day instead of making us lose weight will make us gain weight. So it is very important that we eat at least 3 to 4 times a day. We should eat the right portions, and we should eat the right food.
So what about protein? Tell us about that. Is that right? Is it important to keep our body, our muscles stronger? Not eating enough protein will make your muscles atrophy. Tell us about how much we do need during the day. Some people say people are eating too much protein lately, they're trying to catch up or not enough. What is the healthy amount that our listeners should be taking right now?
Okay. Again, I'll divide this question into two parts. So let's first talk about muscles you had mentioned. Why muscles are important. What we know now is the fat we have in our body is two kinds of fat. One is a white fat, one is a brown fat. And the white fat is the slowly degrading kind of fat, but the brown fat has mitochondria in it, a lot of them. which causes this to degenerate very fast. So that is the fat burning mode. So we want to increase our brown fat so that we can burn our fat out. And our muscles secrete an enzyme called incretin. This incretin enzyme converts our white fat into brown fat. So that is why muscles are important. So when we have more muscles, or if we get more muscles, we produce more incretin, we convert our white fat into brown fat, and we lose fat and weight. Your second question about what kind of protein diet is important. So we know there are benefits of high protein diet. So number one, you do need high protein diet to increase your muscle mass. We also know that high protein diet increases our energy expenditure. It increases satiety from food, so it doesn't let us eat more. High protein diet, a study found that increases water intake by 50 to 75%, which by itself increases our metabolic rate by 30%. So it is high protein diet is good to increase our metabolic rate. It is also known to improve glucose control modestly. It also improves your cholesterol, and it also has been seen that it has it reduces your blood pressure by 5 to 10 points. So high protein diet is very beneficial.
So when we're talking about portion control in our diet, it's not necessarily all the same. Is that right? If we're having vegetables, fruit, you know, complex carbs and protein, we need to really measure the differences and eat the amount that's necessary. And it sounds from what you're telling us that high protein is important as far as part of our dietary plan.
Yes, high protein is very important, and also portion control is important. And since mm-hmm. we are touching base on portion control, there are researches done on portion control. So one of the interesting research is if you have food on a larger plate, you are going to eat a larger portion. And there's another research which showed that if you eat a large portion of food, it does not change how much you will eat in the next meal. And hunger and satiety rating after eating a large or a smaller portion of the food is the same. And only 40% of the people notice that they are eating a large portion of food. 60% of the people don't even realize that they are eating a large portion of the food. And this is what we call portion distortion. And that is the primary reason we are having the weight issues that we have now.
That's so true. And I notice myself, I'll say, you know what, I'll eat a lot now and I'll eat less later. That never happens. On the contrary, my appetite is increased anyway. But one last thing before we, you know, this is so interesting. So, you know, the Mediterranean diet with less protein, and you're telling us more protein, which makes sense because the muscles help with longevity and with strength and for many reasons. So you're telling the listeners that we should have a well-balanced diet, portion control, high protein. Is that correct?
Yes. We should have high protein diet, and it should be of the right portions, and you should be eating 3 to 4 times a day, not skipping your breakfast and eating 4 or 5 times a day. So that is all very important. And when we talk about any kind of diet, there are many diets in the market. Many of them work, but the question is, can we stick to it? Because if we cannot stick to a diet, we should not start it. So I always tell my patients that they have to look for 3 criteria whenever they choose a diet plan. Number one is it should be easy to do so you can stick to it. Number two, it should allow us to eat real food. And number three, it should change your eating habits for good so that you can last long and you can keep the lost weight off.
Absolutely. And so we shouldn't be hungry either. That's very important. Anyway, we have to stop. I mean, I could go on forever.
Yeah, we ran a little over, but I'll take.
I know,
Ryan. It was a great interview.
So interesting. And he's so, you know, food and what can I tell you? We can't just get away from it. We can't avoid it. So we have to make friends with it and not make it our enemy. But author of Fat Me Not, Weight Loss Diet of the Future, Dr. Gruel, extremely knowledgeable in this area. And is there a website you would like the viewers to know about?
Yes, they can come to our website, slimplatesystem.com or fatmenotbook.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. Thank you.
And Dr. Frieda will be back on Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, which will be a special show where people can get their dreams analyzed. And where can people learn more about you, Dr. Frieda?
Well, the dreams are going to be fun, and they can always reach me on my website, Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R, Frieda, F-R-I-E-D-A.
Okay. Thank you so much, and we'll see everyone here next week.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.